Building Bridges with Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash.
Later on, we'll talk with Hollywood royalty Susan Sarandon, actress and civil liberties advocate, who joins us to demand freedom for Julian Assange.
But first, Greystone editor Max Blumenthal, participating in a rally organized by Stand with Assange, reveals what's behind the mass media whiteout on Julian Assange and the shocking revelations that should have attracted widespread coverage in the global media. If Julian Assange is extradited from the UK to the US, he faces up to 175 years in prison. The media silence and imprisonment of Assange represents a threat both to our First Amendment protections of the press, but the very life of Julian Assange.
We're going to free who?
Julian.
We're going to free who?
Julian.
Okay. Max Blumenthal, thank you for the work that you do and making us a stronger anti-imperialist community able to do the work to free journalists like Julian Assange. Max Blumenthal.
Julian Assange poses a threat to the national security state that spans through the Five Eyes states, from the U.S. through the U.K., throughout this whole dimension of imperialism that's represented by organizations like NATO or the U.S. State Department, which was exposed through Cablegate, the CIA, which was exposed through the Vault 7 leaks. And many of these people who oppose him, we can't reach them in this to confront people who actually represent the economic and political forces that control our lives, that represent the media, that pull the strings of the media. But they're hiding behind an architecture of security in air-conditioned offices. And so it's very difficult to actually scathe them. And that is really the triumph of Julian Assange, to lift the mask on what is known colloquially as the deep state. So it's impossible to overstate the importance of Julian Assange from the perspective of protecting and extending whatever is left of democracy. I'll sum up the first part of the investigation, which I think will explain to you why there is no case against Julian Assange, on top of the fact that the key witness in the Espionage Act indictment against Julian has turned out to be a total fraud. There is the fact that Julian Assange was spied on while he was meeting with his lawyers. He was the target of an assassination plot by the very government that's seeking his extradition. There is no way he can have a free and fair trial in the United States. How did I gather this material? A previously unknown former Spanish Special Forces officer named David Morales was arrested in Spain on his way back from a shady trip to South America. He was a security contractor, a self-proclaimed mercenary, and Spanish National Police had been carrying out an investigation on him, wiretapping him, following him everywhere. Morales was put on trial in the Spanish National Court for violating Julian Assange's attorney-client privilege, embezzlement, and various other acts of fraud. Spanish National Court obtained text messages, WhatsApp messages, all sorts of private communications between Morales and his employees at a security firm called UC Global. And these files told the story not only of this small-time security contractor's spying on Julian Assange, but of the CIA's plot against Julian Assange, because this security contractor, David Morales, had been recruited by the CIA through Sheldon Adelson's Las Vegas Sands Corporation at a security conference held at an Adelson-owned convention center in Las Vegas 3 years before. When Donald Trump was elected and Mike Pompeo became CIA director, the plot, the embassy where Julian Assange was essentially trapped in London as the hotel, the plot began. The plot was essentially announced by Mike Pompeo in his first address as CIA director. He wanted to get Julian Assange, and he promised to do it by, first of all, removing WikiLeaks from First Amendment protections, declaring that Assange was another Philip Agee, referring to the first CIA whistleblower to reveal classified documents on CIA crimes, and declaring WikiLeaks a hostile, non-state intelligence agency, and that anything would be allowed against Assange. David Morales and UC Global had the contract with the Ecuadorian government and its security agency to protect Julian Assange at the embassy, the Ecuadorian embassy in Ecuador. So basically the CIA turned the guys whose job was to protect Julian Assange. David Morales comes back from being recruited by the CIA at Adelson's Hotel and Resort to Spain, and he's bragging to his guys, we're in the big leagues now. And all they had to do, basically, was whenever someone came to visit Julian Assange, they would take their devices, hack into them, get all the numbers they could. They were given lists from Washington of who to watch out for, particularly anyone who had any Russian affiliation. Members of the UC Global team at the embassy were ordered to stalk Stella Morris. Then they applied a magnetic microphone to listen to Julian Assange's conversations, particularly with his lawyers. The system was being set up so that it could feed directly back to Washington without the Ecuadorians knowing. And I obtained documents from an IP address in Las Vegas at Adelson's Resort instructing UC Global employees on how to set up this two-way feed so that Washington could watch Julian Assange without the Ecuadorians knowing. David Morales, to receive these instructions in Las Vegas, very poor English. Essentially, everything was building up to a December 20th, 2017 meeting where Julian Assange would meet with Romy Vallejo, who is the head of Ecuador's security services, SENAIN, as well as various lawyers, and they would set up a plan for Julian Assange to legally leave the embassy under the Vienna Conventions and be granted diplomatic status by another state. It was not necessarily Russia that would be that state, and there were other countries, including Evo Morales' Bolivia and Serbia, were on the table as well. So at this December 20th meeting, there was kind of a code red in Langley. You could tell that from the messages that I got through these documents that David Morales and his team were receiving from UC Global. Basically, what the CIA did was spy on the director of the security services of Ecuador throughout this entire meeting. The following day, a secret indictment was introduced in federal court in Virginia without the knowledge of anyone, although Julian and many of his supporters had always said there was a secret indictment. And it was because they wanted to foil this meeting. Todd Chapman, the U.S. ambassador to Ecuador, actually began threatening Ecuadorian authorities against executing the plan. The Ecuadorian officials said, how the hell does this guy know that there was any plan? So at that point, it became clear. They were spying on him. They had to abandon ship. In addition, the office of Baltasar Garzon, who is the lead counsel for WikiLeaks and Julian Assange, his office was robbed by hooded men who ruffled through papers and took nothing. 2 weeks after David Morales proposed, according to the texts and the emails that I obtained, 2 weeks after he proposed a robbery, David Morales proposed assassinating Julian Assange or leaving a door to the embassy open so that a snatch and grab team could come in and kidnap him. And by the way, it was the assassination proposal that I think prompted the UC Global staffers to go to the Spanish National Police and tell them that this is too much for them. And that's when the Spanish police launched the investigation on David Morales. So this story really has it all. I mean, if you were able to follow the details of the story I'm telling, it's an amazing story. It really deserves a Hollywood treatment if Hollywood wasn't basically hacked by the CIA. You should also remember that the New York Times and the Washington Post cheered on Julian Assange's arrest in April 2019. Mr. Assange's case could conclude as a victory for the rule of law. not the defeat for civil liberties of which his defenders mistakenly warn, wrote the Washington Post editorial board, which is just like a collection of discredited neocons. Then they even demanded, the Post clamored for Julian Assange's extradition to the US. And they said that they hoped he could be coerced into being a cooperative witness on the Russiagate saga, which is itself discredited. But, you know, casting aspersions on Assange as a kind of Russian asset and basically suggesting that he should be tortured into confessing something. This is the Washington Post where they say democracy dies in darkness. The New York Times also cheered on Julian Assange's arrest. The Trump administration has begun well by charging Mr. Assange with an indisputable crime. The New York Times editorial board wrote on April 11th, 2019, they praised Trump. This is what they praised Trump for: attacking the First Amendment, arresting a journalist, violating the sovereignty of Ecuador, spying on him and his lawyers, possibly proposing to kill him, spying on his partner, spying on his children, spying on other journalists. This is what the New York Times praised Donald Trump for. And so this should be in your mind when you protest the New York Times building. This whole case is an indictment of all of our in so-called national security institutions, but also our media. Our media is concerned with some of the most banal stories right now, and this one is staring them in the face. And we should consider the fact that before Julian Assange was accused of co-founding Russian WikiLeaks by Hillary Clinton and the whole freak out over Russiagate, the New York Times and the Washington Post were feasting off of WikiLeaks revelations and relied on them for so many front page stories. So this is how they repay their source. It is just absolutely disgusting. And so I don't want to break into mainstream media. I've given up on them. I want to break mainstream media. I don't have any hope for them. It's great to be on the protest. There's some protests around Netflix, but not much protest around the fact that, you know, just a few days before Julian Assange's extradition hearing, they are revamping this discredited documentary, We Steal Secrets, which paints Julian Assange basically as a psychotic rapist. Not totally discredited allegations. This is from 2013. They've been discredited in courts. There's no there. And they're revamping this documentary when this is about a journalist being tortured. And it's a journalist who made this, Alex Gibney, who I actually personally know, I've known for years. And rather than actually being magnanimous and principled and standing up for the First Amendment, whatever he thinks about Julian Assange, he had to sign off for this with Netflix, whose previous board member, is now the domestic policy advisor to the Biden administration, Susan Rice. This is an operation. So the Biden administration is essentially saying that we are the world police. We can kidnap people who are not US citizens and put them on trial in the United States for laws that they never broke, because international law doesn't apply here. It's just the rules-based order, what Anthony Blinken and Joe Biden call the rules-based order, which is actually mafia rule. What they're saying is, we make the rules and you follow our orders. And so we need to stand up and defy the rules-based order by asserting international law and by asserting the Constitution, the First Amendment, and our basic belief in the core principles of WikiLeaks, radical transparency, because they truly were an intelligence agency for the people. So thanks again for having me here, for putting on this event. I hope this was informative, and I hope this will inspire the protest at the New York Times building, which is much needed.
Max, tell us again the name of the article so people can further reinforce what you've been saying. It's really, really deep, cogent, profound. What's the name of the article, Max?
The first article is called The American Friends. It's at thegrayzone.com, gray with an A. The American Friends, new court files expose Sheldon Adelson's security team in U.S. spy operation against Julian Assange. And then the second article is mainstream U.S. reporters silent about being spied on by apparent CIA contractor that targeted Assange.
Thank you. Again, Max Blumenthal. And we're going to bring who home?
Julian Assange.
When?
Now.
Okay.
You've been listening to Gray Zone editor Max Blumenthal at a rally organized by Stand With Assange New York as part of this global week of action to demand freedom for journalist Julian Assange.
Now actress and civil liberties activist Susan Sarandon lends her voice to a growing international chorus to free Julian Assange and for us to request that U.S. Attorney General Merrick Garland drop the extradition request and dismiss the underlying indictment.
Susan Sarandon, you have the humanity and the sensitivity to commit yourself to the issues of anti-poverty, human rights, climate-based issues, and now the issue of Julian Assange. So tell us why you specifically are here to support Julian Assange.
Well, in my humble opinion, freedom of the press is at the very heart of a democracy. Once you lose freedom of the press, it's pretty hard to claim that you have a democracy. And I think that it's pretty clear that he is a journalist who gave us information which was not embraced by the power structure, and this what's happening to him is an intimidation of journalism all around the world and definitely vindictive for what he managed to bring forward. And I think as a United States citizen, I want to know what my government is involved in my name, and I also want to know as much as I can about candidates that are running for the highest office in the land. And so I understand that these are inconvenient truths, as we say, but I think it's very important to support him because I think they are the powers that be, the structures that be, are making an example of him, and the United States is a big bully where these things are concerned.
You said the press should be a liberalizing, a democratic force. Indeed, many of us think of it as the fourth estate to kind of, shall we say, balance out the executive, the legislative, and the judicial branch. At this particular time, what do you think a free press and somebody like Julian Assange and Chelsea Manning really bring to that process? What does it mean for democracy at a time when it would seem that the practice of democracy is so fragile?
Now, most of the media that most people get their information from is corporate. And so we have to turn to independent journalists to tell us what's going on so we can have an opinion about issues that are going to directly affect us. I know from working on the Steve Donziger case also, you know, who Chevron is trying to kill, basically. I know that just seeing the way that mainstream media has ignored that information, the way mainstream media is ignoring the amount of strikes that are going on now, for instance. So how, as a citizen of the United States, can you make decisions when you don't have information? And so I think this is a test case, and it's very, very important for the future of our country and the future of journalism, and certainly for the future of Mr. Assange.
What about your own industry? You work in an industry that has potentially so much influence, and we have wonderful people such as yourself and Danny Glover, and we've had people, and indeed still Harry Belafonte, and we had Ruby Dee, and that kind of group. Do you think that the industry you're involved in is kind of rising to the occasion of the traditional streak of liberalcy and application of its own skills and prestige to...
Well, it feels pretty lonely out here, actually.
Yeah.
I think that what's happened is with the internet, it's just so easy for everything to be seen as a misstep, and then there's an enormous amount of ganging up on people, and so I think there's a lot of self-censorship and a very rarefied atmosphere of questioning. I mean, you just can't step out of line. I think we saw that really clearly in the first time that Bernie Sanders was running against Hillary. You know, that my industry definitely decided that Hillary was their candidate, and anyone who decided to even investigate an alternative, it came down pretty hard. And I think that the internet has made that a real fear for people because, you know, there are a lot of people that are rejuvenated by hate and just spend, it seems to be, a lot of time not even reading articles, not, you know, just getting on a bandwagon of whatever the torturing of a person is without even knowing the facts. And clickbait, you know, has made that kind of a thing.
I mean, have you actually seen a demonstrative change? Is there really a slippage from, again, we had thought of Hollywood as notwithstanding its some degree of capitulation, understandably, during McCarthyism and so on. But we thought of it as such a progressive, forthright industry very often.
No, Hollywood really just is about money. They're going to go with whatever makes money. Hollywood has never been political. They don't want people to get old or fat, and other than that, whatever happens, happens. If you can bring in money, then you're fine. But in terms of the kind of clubbiness or inside the social situation, you know, that definitely goes in waves, and there's definitely some sportsmanship in terms of politics, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it's in any way connected to real issues or real work. It's just a kind of more of a feeling of a clubhouse. And I think, you know, the industry isn't political one way or another. I think people that tend to have a lot of money tend to also be on a certain side of what's important to them, and like tax breaks and loopholes and things like that, no matter what industry they're in. I think that I don't know that Hollywood has ever been really progressive. I think that's a myth that is started by, you know, very right-wing people. But from what I've seen, there are people that are activists, just like in other businesses, that, you know, learn about issues. And Jane Fonda knows a lot about things when she steps out, and she, you know, especially about the environment, or Vanessa Redgrave. I mean, people that get to know issues. There are some young people that... Shailene Woodley, you know, during the primaries was very active and showed up at Standing Rock. And I think some people are very active in terms of the environment to a certain extent, but that doesn't necessarily feed into policy. It doesn't necessarily feed into understanding which representatives are taking which money. That's the next level. Mm. You know, there's a lot of tribal performance politics now that aren't necessarily... It's a lot about talk, and then you look at how people vote, and it's a completely different thing. You know, when you look at the bills that they vote for, and, you know, most of the Dems were all giving Trump every single thing he wanted. And they just voted again in terms of the military budget, and they just voted again for Israel, and they just voted again. You know, there's certain things that just keep happening. And we still don't have a $15 minimum wage or health care. I mean, real things that people need, real things. So for me, unless you're in the trenches and you're really working, I don't care what you say, you know, because it's kind of just a hobby. So I look to the people who really are fighting for real things, no matter what they call themselves, Democrats, Independents, Republicans, I don't care, because I don't identify with the Democratic Party now at all. So I'm just looking to try to help get food to people and housing to people, and, you know, just basic things. Keep us out of another war. Try to stop fracking. Things that are real. And the other stuff are just kind of games and identity politics, really. Not actual concerns with the changing of the structures that, for instance, I think the Sunshine Kids get it. They're not about any political party. They're about policy. They want real things, you know. They're talking about real things. So that's what we need, more of that.
Well, just as we conclude, so the final message on, not the final, but a message, well, actually, maybe it should be the final message, because we're going to bring Assange home. Your particular message to the people listening to this broadcast about Julian Assange, Susan Sarandon, is?
If you feel that you have some complicated feelings about him, I would say do more research about the actual facts and this appeal that's going to be coming up, and the fact that there's been some changing of testimony. But just overall, understand what this means in terms of the future of journalism, the future of your ability to get information and make decisions, the future of you being able to trust that when you read a paper or see the news, that's the truth. And I think that's been eroded, and one of the reasons is because this kind of thing is going on, and this is a big, big deal. And I hope for him and his family and for us that he comes home.
Susan Sarandon, thank you for all your years of commitment and your stellar craft.
Thank you.
And you still had the best gown, as far as I'm concerned, at the Academy Awards, but that's another story. We can take that up later. Thank
okay.
you so much.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Susan Sarandon saying, drop the charges against Julian Assange. Free him now.
This has been Building Bridges with Ken Nash and Mimi Rosenberg. Educate, and organize for the empowerment of we the people, for another world is possible.